Dan Cook, before we get to Patricia and John, if we ask people for the top five yacht rock tunes, I'm fairly convinced this would make the top five.
Well, it should. I mean, it should.
Yes.
You got to have Toto in there somewhere.
Yes. And now we've had 19 different versions of this song. Some of them are like, some of them fall flat on their face. Let's go mobile with Playing Politics. I mean, we're willing to leave the studio. John is here. Patricia Lopez is joining us from Sydney, Australia.
I'm coming to you live from the state capital.
Oh, it sounds so much better if it was Sydney, Australia, right?
I wouldn't mind it.
You're selfless. You're willing. If the Star Tribune wants to send you, you're willing to go.
Especially if they want to send me to Nevada.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's start nationally because we have a lot that's taking place politically. John, great you're here also. Let's start, and Pat, I'll start with you. Mike Bloomberg. Continues to surge in a number of polls.
Mm-hmm.
He qualified on Monday night for this by above 10% for another poll.
With a little bending of the rules.
Oh, changing the rules halfway through it. I mean, I'm sure Booker and Harris are saying, couldn't we have bent some rules while we were still in it? So let me ask you this.
The donor thing? Yeah, forget about that.
Yeah. The numbers are going up. That's without a doubt. So is the scrutiny, so is the questioning, so is some audio that's uncomfortable. I said this the other day, and Pat, you go first. I think Mike Bloomberg would have been better if he didn't participate in this debate, because to me, seemingly he's doing better without stepping up on stage and having five other candidates go at him specifically and directly. Do you think Bloomberg will benefit tonight from his appearance at the debate?
It depends on how much his prep work has been done well. If he comes out really focused with strong answers, he could even improve his standing, and that is the risk reward ratio he's taking in doing this debate. I think he knows he has to do it in order to be seen as more than a completely canned TV only candidate. He doesn't want to do that. He wants to mix it up with them. You know, they're gonna come after him. Although I would say four of them should remember that Bernie Sanders is the undisputed front runner at the moment. So they might want to save a little of their fire for him.
We're gonna get to that because a poll came out today, and it's a big lead right now. John, how about Bloomberg? I think Patricia raised a good point. He has to jump in at some point. Is this the best time for him to qualify?
We know he can do ads. We don't know if he can ad lib, and we're going to find out on the debate stage tonight. He has not been in any kind of a debate. Last one was a mayoral one since 2009. So I think that this is indeed a very significant test for him. I have no doubt that he will be prepared. He is a data-driven, information-seeking individual, and I think that he will come in, and certainly he is will be prepared for his Democratic opponents to come at him for some of his previous comments, previous policies, and presidential prospects, including his ability to open up his wallet and propel himself to the stage that he is in the national polls at this point. But all that being said, it also will give him a great opportunity, as Patricia says, if he holds his own and perhaps even more and solidifies his role as the anti-Sanders candidate, the one who could consolidate the middle, the moderates, and even maybe take a little bit of support from Senator Elizabeth Warren should she continue to falter in the polls. So there is a risk-reward ratio, but that's how he's marked his entire political and business career, and in general, he's gone in the right direction.
Yeah, Chad, I'm told from a couple of Democratic operatives I know that have worked on a number of campaigns that Bloomberg has been busy for a while now scooping up the best from every campaign, every previous campaign, the Clinton campaign, some of the other campaigns that have gone in the past, and just sort of gathering all of that talent. And I have to assume that includes debate prep.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be really curious to see what the results of that are.
John, let me go this way on Bloomberg because I want to stay with this a little bit longer. So Mike Bloomberg, Major Garrett, pointed out the data again. In 2011, 2012, 80% of individuals who were stopped for stop and frisk, a person of color, 90% of those individuals stopped, innocent. his comments towards women, his behavior towards women, his behavior towards women he's employed, drawing a number of lawsuits, some settlements, some still pending. Now we have some today coming out where he was incredibly dismissive of individuals who are transitioning. How many times has it happened in a race where the masses, either for Democrats or Republicans, where they say, you know what, on this guy, on some core issues, I just don't agree, but I will accept that he has the best chances to beat the opponent, so I'm picking him over two or three other candidates who I personally prefer.
One very significant time, and that man is in the race,
yes,
be on the Republican ballot, and indeed, that's the exact path that President Donald Trump took,
yep,
when he won the 2016 nomination, and you would hear individually from Republicans, collectively in terms of public opinion polls, where he stood on issues, not as many agreed with, certainly his approach to dialogue and discourse, a lot of people didn't agree with, but they thought in the end that he was the person who could beat Secretary Clinton and take the presidency back for the Republicans. He was, and in some ways, Mayor Bloomberg benefits from the normalizing of some of this behavior, some of these comments, some of this past, and certainly the idea of a billionaire coming in and spending a lot of his own money trying to,
yep,
get a nomination for the very person he's trying to replace. So if it does end up being those two at the end, you know, many of those factors will be neutralized in terms of both President Trump and Mayor Bloomberg. So, of course, that won't sit well with his Democratic opponents, and you'll certainly hear a lot about that tonight.
You know, Republicans learned the hard way that they actually prefer power to purity. And we'll have to see whether Democrats can make that same calculation. It's been interesting to watch them savage each one of their candidates in turn. You know, they all fall short. Biden falls short. Warren falls short. There's fault with Klobuchar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now with Bloomberg, they're going to have to decide, do they want to, you know, keep somebody viable who can beat Trump? Is that more important to them than going down the list of flaws for each of these candidates?
John Rash is here in studio. Patricia Lopez is with us on the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus Hotline, Playing Politics, this partnership between the Star Tribune and CCO. Okay, Pat, I'm going to start with you on this one. Bernie Sanders is on, seems like CNN has a town hall, by the way, but every 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Bernie is on last night, Buttigieg and Klobuchar. And I thought where Bernie failed pretty bad is when Anderson Cooper asked him, okay,
yeah,
let's say you end up winning the nomination. And Mike Bloomberg has said if he does not win, he is willing to give hundreds of millions of dollars to the winner. And Bernie did not give a definitive answer on when Anderson Cooper said, okay, you're railing about billionaires, you're railing about Bloomberg, you railed about the infinitesimal amount of money that Buttigieg reads from billionaires. So now, Bernie, will you take the money from Mike Bloomberg? And he wouldn't answer the question. I'm sorry,
mm-hmm,
Pat. That's hypocrisy. You have to,
yeah,
answer that question.
He not only has to answer that question, there's another episode of hypocrisy. He promised after his heart attack that he would release his,
yep,
full medical records before the Iowa caucus. He not only didn't do that, he's now done a complete flip-flop and said that he's not going to release his medical records at all. And his campaign chair actually goes on TV and claims it's a smear campaign to even ask him to release the records. That you know, that's another episode of hypocrisy that I think people should find very troubling.
On both those points, John, I want you to react, because I'm going to even elaborate what Pat said. Because the same spokesman then started saying, well, Mike Bloomberg has suffered multiple heart attacks.
Oh, yeah.
Why doesn't that give?
True.
Well, as it turns out, Mike Bloomberg's had a stent. Okay,
yeah.
He's had a stent.
20 years ago.
Yeah, which is very different than multiple heart attacks. The same spokesman the day before said Mike Bloomberg is facing sexual allegations from 64 women. He's faced accusations, there's no doubt. There's no proof it's that high. So this same spokesman, John, had to step back her words back-to-back days. I mean, I think Bernie's facing heat on that one, and I think he absolutely has to answer this question. If you're against billionaire money during the primary, are you going to be against it again later if Mike Bloomberg's willing to say, here's $250 million. I wish it was me, but Trump can't win.
I concur. He has to answer both and many other questions, as all candidates certainly should. But it does show how he greatly benefits from his base in terms of more than any Democrat in the race, and perhaps anyone in American politics right now, aside from President Trump. He enjoys the unquestioned loyalty
yes.
of a lot of his supporters.
100% right.
Which are across the country and have a zeal for his nomination that has not been seen for quite some time. Now, the question is...
that still only amounts to a third of the field.
That's a great point, Patricia. I was going to say the question is this just...
Where's the ceiling?
What is the ceiling there in that respect? But very similar dynamics to 2016, and I spoke about this in terms of the style, but also the arithmetic in that if two-thirds of the vote out there is not for Senator Sanders, but it's split between six candidates, and, you know, in some Nevada polls, Tom Steyer has 11%. No one's consolidating it yet.
Yeah.
That's obviously Mayor Bloomberg's hope, and what Joe Biden was supposed to be all about as the formerly inevitable candidate. No one has been able to coalesce that more middle, more moderate lane in this respect, and this is how Senator Sanders may be able to at least go into the convention with a ability to say, I should be the nominee, if not outright win it. Many weeks and many events will take place before then, but he's doing quite well in the polls
right now. Let me jump in here. I want to go about 2 minutes and take a break so we stay on time. Pat, we have the Washington Post ABC News poll that comes out today, and it's Bernie Sanders at 32%.
Mm-hmm.
32%. Okay, that's a third, but that's double Joe Biden, and I think most of us are right now. Joe Biden's not winning the nomination. It's just a matter of when he keeps withering. And then it gets to Bloomberg at 14. How big is that lead? Okay, how substantial is Bernie Sanders as the front runner right now?
It's, you know, it's an indisputable lead. I'll say that. But the key is right now. So we still have Nevada, and then the real test, I think, will come on Super Tuesday when you've got multiple states that, you know, Nevada, he's been working in that territory since 2016.
He's going to win Nevada.
I think that's a pretty safe bet.
Yeah.
And that gives him a really good base to head into Super Tuesday. How he's going to do in the South, I think that's an open question.
John, what do you think about the size of the lead at this point?
Again, without the coalescence around one specific rival, very different dynamic in 2016 when it was two candidates, Secretary Clinton and Senator Sanders. And not to be forgotten was how well Bernie Sanders did in that campaign and
yes.
came quite close to Hillary Clinton, beat her in many primaries and caucuses, including right here in
mm-hmm.
Minnesota. But in a divided field, a third is quite significant, and he, as time goes on, that certainly will be tested, as you and Patricia both mentioned. But right now, he is a formidable front runner, and that's why it's so curious that it seems that so many candidates tonight in the debate in Las Vegas are going to be taking on Mike Bloomberg and, in effect, allow Senator Sanders to be unscathed relative to how they're going to train their sights on the newcomer. And meanwhile, the established candidate all the way back to 2016 is moving forward in his quest for the nomination.
Yeah, and the 2016 Republican nominees, the president, did a bit of the same, right? He kept saying around 20 to 30, well ahead, and everybody kept saying, well, it's going to coalesce and somebody's going to come together. No, Trump kept that lead. Let's take a short break, come back with Patricia Lopez and John Rash, playing politics from the Star Tribune. Let's bring Patricia Lopez back in the conversation on the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus Hotline. John Rash is here. We'll get to local in a second or two. All right, John, you first. Are you believing the Attorney General on what he's putting out here about that the president needs to stop tweeting? I can't do my job. It's too uncomfortable. Now I'd reporting yesterday suggesting that the Attorney General is so frustrated by it that he's close to quitting. And a lot of other people, and yes, a lot of other people in this group, almost all of them are never Trumpers, are saying, I don't believe this at all. This is trying to sway the public a little bit, Barr trying to slow down the endless criticism from the DOJ. What do you think? Where are you at with this one?
That there's truth in both aspects of it. And specifically what I mean by that is, do I think that the Attorney General wishes the president wouldn't tweet about his job? Yeah, I do. And I think that anyone in government probably would wish that. It's remarkable that he publicly said it. And is he quite close to the legal community within Washington and within this country? And is this embarrassing towards him professionally and even personally? Yes, it is. But I think the tell is the lack of response. The dog that didn't bark, as Sherlock Holmes would say, mm-hmm. in terms of President Trump.
Yeah.
And if you think of any other member of his administration
correct.
Who would so publicly take him on.
How about anybody on the planet?
And yeah, and the relative silence from the President of the United States. Think of how hard he pushed back against Attorney General Jeff Sessions.
For years.
Absolutely. And how he did that privately and publicly, and the fact that that doesn't seem to be happening suggests that perhaps the Attorney General is trying to get a little bit of space, but he certainly isn't far from what President Trump wants done on all of these cases.
I think we're seeing a bit of theater here from Attorney General Barr, and it probably doesn't amount to much more than that. He's the one that really pushed this idea of the powerful unitary executive. Now he's seeing it play out. If he doesn't like it, what's stopping him from resigning?
Mm-hmm.
Certainly enough attorney generals around the country have and former attorney generals have asked for him to resign. If he feels that he can't do the job, he should just leave.
Don't
tweet about it.
Yeah, let's talk about St. Paul where you're at, Patricia, right now. When you're there and you're covering it, mm-hmm. what's the number one story that you're following with the role of the governor and the House, Senate, Republicans, and Democrats?
It's early enough in the session that I don't think there is one, a singular issue that's being followed. There's a lot of politicking now. There was a little bit on the House floor this morning when Republicans decided to jump up and ask for additional funding on a rural loan program, and then it turns out they hadn't even gone to the committee chair first. So, it's the kind of thing you can always expect. There are serious issues to be done here. There was a housing panel this morning. Housing is a huge problematic issue, really demands every bit of consideration that it can get. And they've got a lot of other big policy issues besides, not the least of which is farmers who are genuinely hurting. So something will have to be done about that as well. This is a policy year, but it's also a bonding year. So they've got to figure out a bonding bill. The governor wants something like a $2 billion program that he says would reinvest in a number of areas in Minnesota. Republicans are much more judicious, and they say they want something much less than that.
John, what was your view? And we had Mayor Fry on the show on Monday, and we had Kurt Dowd on it yesterday, where the GOP comes up with a bill directed at major cities about really what they need to do for safety, number of police officers, how they need to handle it. Fry, to the surprise of the GOP, showed up. He was chiming in. He was chiming in afterwards. He had the push, the borderline finger on the chest and back and forth with Representative Grossel. Were they both being partisans? Did this surprise you? And where are we headed with this one?
It was a missed opportunity by Mayor Fry. And while he may have been right about some of the specifics about some of what was said by legislators in St. Paul, it would have been an opportunity to bridge the divide between urban and rural, Democrat and Republican, and in effect say, well before this kind of a press conference, let's sit down, let's roll up our sleeves. We indeed could use some more help. There are statewide assets that are right here in downtown Minneapolis, Target Field, Target Center, U.S. Bank Stadium, and so many others. And let's work together and show how government can work for everyone. And by the time it gets to a press conference that he has to attend and try to interrupt as if he's a member of the press, then the public perception is that the situation is not going to get any better. And to that degree, that hurts the city of Minneapolis, because if there is indeed a perception, I think there is among many in the state, that the city is less safe than it used to be, that hurts the city because it reduces the number of people who are willing to come down here. It also might reduce the kind of political cooperation that's needed to try to come to a solution.
Patricia, I got to
that works
real
both
quick.
Ways. You yep. know, the Republicans could have come to Mayor Fry and Mayor Carter and asked them what kind of, and you know, worked with them on what kind of help, they wanted to go the press conference route. So are both sides being partisan? Of course they are. These are partisan issues, and it's a political year, but there is a lot of middle ground. The bottom line is increased law enforcement takes increased money. So let's see what both sides are actually willing to do in that regard.
Good stuff from both of you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Always enjoy playing politics. Your Lindis Construction Time Check is 158. Time to learn about energy-efficient Infinity from Marvin Windows.